family okay. Kate, could you tell me what you had for breakfast?
Well, I had what I have every single morning, which is boiled egg and toast.
Oh, lovely.
And a glass of orange juice.
Fair.
How many minutes?
4.
So soft.
But to be honest, I don't actually time it. I just have a sensation.
You know.
Yeah.
The egg speaks to you.
Yeah.
The best advice my dad has ever given me, which is like, it really is like a gem, and it really, I still haven't quite comprehended the like fullness of its wisdom, which is like, you can't peel a raw egg.
But can you?
Yeah, I was going to say, could you?
No, well,
peel a raw egg.
I think you could.
Maybe just I've tried it. Yeah. La, 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 la. I'm all about fun.
Welcome everybody to 2020. This is the second ever episode of the Greater Than 11% panel show. Before I introduce our wonderful and first ever panel guest, Kate Bassett, I would like us to have a quick chat about the final three guests of 2019 and what we learned from them. So, Renee, what did you take away from our final guests of 2019?
So we had Alice Whittington, also known as DJ Norska. We had the wonderful Laura Mimon from Kaleido, and we also had Flavia Amaral. What didn't I take away? Three amazing women. So Alice was fantastic to kick off the second series of interviews, and she is just such a bloody brilliant woman. She left her day job, her office job, to become a DJ. She worked super hard, long hours, on little pay, and then climbed up the ranks herself. And I have to confess, I haven't seen her live, but I have watched some YouTube clips of her, and watching her perform, she is so joyous. And she talks in the episode about her purpose being to be able to bring energy and great time and a fun time for people attending a club, and she definitely does that. I just loved watching those clips. So she was absolutely awesome to talk to.
Yeah, I loved that she said one of the core things for her job was emotional intelligence, because you have to be so good at reading the room to know where people's energy levels are and how to really get people going, get them onto the dance floor, and the difference between being a wedding DJ versus being in a club. The other thing that I loved that she talked about was professionalism within the creative industries, particularly where perhaps nightclubs and that kind of environment, you don't necessarily associate with that. But I loved how she talked about the core things around being on time, making sure that you have the right equipment, and just showing up in a professional way as being a key way that she distinguished herself from other people.
Yeah, it's kind of something I just like took a kind of back step and was like, yeah, that makes so much sense. And you can so see how in that industry people would take the piss, because you're around booze, you're around people having a good time. It would be so easy to kind of slip into that. But she always maintains that kind of level of professionalism, which is a real passion of hers, to, like you're saying, that emotional intelligence then kicks into play. She wants to give people a good time, and that's awesome. I love that her passion has kind of shaped into giving people something.
Definitely. And I also loved the immediacy of her impact. You know, that she can so quickly see from a group of people whether they're responding to her work or not. And I was like, oh, I wonder how I could do something, not necessarily in a professional capacity, where you get that very immediate feedback loop. Because often it takes a lot of, you know, stakeholder management, meetings, processes, and like the excitement that you have initially can take a while to kind of trickle through. So I was like, I need to do something that can be immediately impactful, like watching a group of people feel absolutely filled with joy and energy from music. Yeah, I agree. She was amazing. The thing that I loved about Laura Mimon was how it felt that every experience that she had throughout her career was leading up to what she had done with Kaleido. And it might not have felt like that at the time, but through the choices that she made and the brands that she worked at and the opportunities that she took, she gave herself this perfect skill set to create a new product, take it to market, really understand a segment and market the shit out of it. And I absolutely loved and respected that about her.
Yeah. As soon as you meet Laura, you absolutely adore her. She has the most like infectious, positive energy. And what I really love about what she's done with Kaleido is it was something she really believed in. It was born out of pure excitement. Her and her husband were mucking around in the kitchen. They were like, oh, we should make this into a salad sandwich. And then they had so much fun. So it wasn't something they labored over and thought, oh, wouldn't this be great if we turned it? It was like, this is a great idea. They thought about it. They kind of did it as a slight side hustle, and then they just went for it. And I mean, I didn't need any encouragement. They're bloody delicious. And I keep saying it throughout the episode over and over. But what's great about them is when you eat them, you feel good because so much thought and care has gone into them. And that ripples out with everything she does. And even though she talks about having fear, she does it anyway. And I love that line when she says, I only have one life, so I have to do it. And despite being scared.
Yeah, definitely. I love that as well. And there's a great Ginny Romanetti quote, which is, growth and comfort rarely coexist. And when she was talking about that, it really made me think of that. Yeah, you're so right about where it was born from as well, actually, because you could so imagine a big FMCG company spending ages doing a load of audience insight, thinking about what the next food trend is going to be and like working backwards to creating that thing. But actually there was such a joyful genesis of it. And everything about the brand and her voice is so vibrant and bright. Having not met her, I could see that shining through from the podcast. And then Flavia.
Yes.
You fangirl Renee over there. You've only got a minute to talk about this.
Well, that's easy because she's so talented and so skilled. And I got introduced to her earlier this year and she contributed to our first scene. And she is the one that did the vaginas and the vagina centerfold. And so this was our second anti-podcast, which was super exciting. And so what that does is we have a small recording just introing her and then we direct everyone to our stories/highlights on Instagram. And she has illustrated the interview and it's beautiful. And she created a bespoke piece at the bottom of each one. So we have this lovely stop frame animation. And then we've also included some of her illustrations. And it's such an inspiring interview. And she is such a talented person, like Joy.
Was that the first time that you said vagina on this podcast?
If it is, I'm shocked.
Anyway, you heard it here first. The thing about Flavia's podcast that made me think about doing something differently is the fact that she went to clown school in France.
Oh my God, I'm terrified by that.
I'm terrified by it too, and so was she, right? But I love that she did it. I think that's such a great way to so deliberately get out of your comfort zone. I mean, that honestly instills fear in me to my core, but I just think I haven't done enough of that in 2019. Yeah. And maybe that is a good segue into talking about 2020 and for me to introduce our amazing guest, Kate Bassett.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. So Kate has been a business journalist for the past 14 years. You don't look old enough to have been doing
I think maybe years. That's an old bio because I'm older and wiser now. So actually for the past 19 years.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. Editing Real Business magazine, writing for The Times, The Guardian and The Financial Times. At Management Today, you'll find her interviewing business big shots and entrepreneurs, commissioning columnists, and running Management Today's Inspiring Women event. Alongside your role at Management Today, Kate also works freelance for a very chic clothing brand for professional women called The Fold, which was born of the idea that being serious about work shouldn't compete with being interested in fashion. As well as that, you are such a force for kindness and connection within our industry. To me, you embody lifting others up, and there is something so graceful and fiercely intelligent about you. Over the last year, you've introduced me to so many amazing people, and I'm so delighted that you are our first ever panel guest on Series 2 of Greater Than 11%.
Thank you so much. I think that's the best introduction I've ever had. I actually feel a bit emotional now.
Aww, well, yay.
And what's lovely is you've come in on the 1st of January.
I have. So happy dedicated. New Year, everyone.
There's no one I'd rather spend this precious day with.
Slightly hungover.
So, Kate, three quick fire questions for you, which is a kind of slightly shortened version of the normal format that Renee does with her guests. So, if you could tell us, what do you do? Why do you love it? And one read, watch, or listen recommendation you have for our listeners.
My main role, I guess, is head of content at Management Today. Editing, writing features, heading up our big editorial campaigns, which range from Britain's Most Admired Companies to 35 Women Under 35, which is all about championing Britain's young, talented females, which is how I met you, Crystal. I also am a freelance business writer, chair of our Inspiring Women conferences,
and I'm a mum of two sweet, crazy, feisty girls. So I would say I definitely have a multi-hyphen career and trying to juggle many roles at the same time. I love what I do. I feel that there's a real purpose and mission to it. A lot of my role is around gender equality at work and championing more inclusive cultures in the workplace. And it just makes my blood boil that we still don't have enough women in leadership positions. I think we're still at 6 female CEOs in the FTSE 100. And I feel like I've been using that stat year after year. You know, there's still more men called John, more men called Steve in the FTSE 100 than there are women in leadership positions, which is quite depressing. So we really need to work together to change that. And the other thing I love about my role is being part-time and plural means I have a pretty good work-life balance. Like, it's not perfect. I've never met anyone who has that perfect work-life balance, but I do manage to do the school runs and meet people for a coffee and still have a really fulfilling career.
Amazing. And do you have a recommendation for something that you like to read, watch or listen to?
Something I sort of read and heard about recently is an amazing woman called Sabrina Cohen-Hatton. I think I first heard about her on Lorraine. She was then featured on the Freakonomics podcast in November, and she's written a book called The Heat of the Moment. She just has such an extraordinary and inspiring life. So she grew up in Wales, had a very happy childhood. Her parents both ran a pizzeria together, and she always said they would talk about how blessed they were to have two happy, healthy children and a roof over their heads. But then when she was 9, her father died of a brain tumour. Her mother really struggled with her mental health. She wasn't able to cope, and the family sunk into abject poverty. There were social workers coming and going. They were on the at-risk register. And when Sabrina was 15, it got too much and she moved out and was living on the streets. So she was homeless, I think, for about 3 years. She was treated terribly. She talks about how she was urinated on, how people would beat her up. Someone even held a cigarette to her arm and burnt her. Mostly people would just walk by and ignore her altogether. She started selling The Big Issue, and that's really how she turned her life around. She managed to save enough money to put a deposit down on a small flat in quite a deprived area of Wales. But through doing that, she got herself off the street and she started to think about what else she could do to improve her life. And she ended up joining the fire service. She says she wanted to rescue people in a way that no one had rescued her. And she's now one of just 6 female fire chiefs in the country and the youngest. And I just think that's bloody amazing. Mm. Partly because she's just smashing every stereotype that is out there, you know, not just around gender, but also social mobility, which I think is such a massive issue in this country around opportunity. You know, we still have 14 million people in this country living in poverty.
And I remember from the event that we were both at where she was talking that even when she moved to being a firefighter, that she also faced a lot of discrimination because she was a woman and other firefighters would wee in her boots before fire drills and all that kind of thing. So it's kind of from adverse situation to adverse situation, the resilience that she's shown and through rising up and becoming one of these 6 female fire chiefs is absolutely incredible. And a question that was asked from the audience when she was at this event that we attended was, what would you advise people do when they see homeless people on the street? Because a lot of the time people feel quite awkward about it and not quite sure whether they should give money or food. And her one piece of advice was, look, there are lots of things that you can do, but if I could give one advice, it would be to look at them and acknowledge their existence and speak to them.
Absolutely. She said it was such a dehumanizing experience. She even remembers a time when a teacher spotted her selling The Big Issue and just crossed the road and ignored her. She said it gave her such a big boost when someone would just look at her and smile and acknowledge that she existed.
Yeah, because it was one of those times where she felt seen versus being invisible the rest of the time because people just walk past you all the time. That's a brilliant recommendation. So The Heat of the Moment, excellent book recommendation.
Yes.
I think her story is so powerful. Thank you for that. So obviously, new decade for us all to look forward to. But before we go on to thinking about our New Year's resolutions, we'd love to have a quick 2019 look back and ask you both how you'll remember 2019. What characterised the year for you personally and then from an overall industry perspective? Renee, would you mind kicking off?
So 2019 has been such a wonderful year for me personally. It actually feels like multiples, like heaps of years into one. I was reflecting on this question and I thought, well, so much has been packed into this year. So what I will remember, I think, for 2019 is people. I've met so many inspiring people this year, and that's been such an incredible treat. I think it's a really kind of great opportunity when you meet people outside your circle and outside your kind of community. And that, for me, means like growth's happening, and I really love that. I'm super pumped that the podcast has gone beyond me and it now includes yourself and Ursi. That to me has been fabulous for 2019. I also feel like I'm at that point in time in which a lot of things will be connected. And I mean that is quite logical in any moment for anyone. But I think I've taken a lot of gut decisions this year and not overthought it and tried to kind of really tear it apart. I've just done it. And so that to me is kind of quite, you know, it's faith. So I feel like things will come to fruition with that, and I'll look back and I'll be like, oh, that's because I made that choice or that decision. So industry-wise, I think it's kind of odd because I really had to think hard about this, which really disappointed me. And maybe it's because I'm on such a high in terms of kind of my own individual perspective at this point in time. But I think the thing that really like immediately came to mind was Nike's Kaepernick advert. For me, that was a real marker in the sand in terms of a brand living its values beyond profit. It was also really powerful to hear a man at the top of his game say that line about the most powerful athlete in the world and referencing a woman. I thought that was actually brilliant. I thought, here we've got a kind of connection, a movement, a campaign tied to Nike, but actually it's beyond that. And I really got goose pimples every time I saw it. So I thought that was a really good thing. And it felt like that was pushing a change in the industry. The other thing that then that fed into me was the Body Proud campaign by Mothercare. And I thought that has actually made me sit up. It was such a simple, beautiful idea. So I guess those two campaigns say a lot in terms of diversity and reality and how we as consumers respond to brands wanting to have a real dialogue with its customers. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a shift we're seeing. It's not just a case of selling us FOMO. It's actually wanting to have a real kind of raw conversation with us. In terms of diversity and equal pay and change, it still feels like baby steps. Kind of going back to what you were saying, Kate, about only having 6 female CEOs in the FTSE 100. That to me is kind of still shocking that we're still there in 2020.
And there was some research out from the World Economic Forum recently which said it's going to take 99 years to close the global gender pay gap. And while that is progress, apparently, actually the UK has fallen behind. So actually we were 15th in terms of country ranking for gender equality and we've slipped to 21.
Oh, that's so depressing.
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
But the 99 number feels like it's moved from being 200, which is something that I felt was referenced a lot earlier in the year.
Yeah,
so
but
at
as
a global
country,
level, good, but as a country, not
moving
great.
Backwards, yeah.
Sorry, I mean, it's just the start of the year. I'm just trying to find a nugget.
A little hopeful,
gloom,
positive.
But
yeah.
It's not good enough.
But I think there is a lot going on that's, you know, people are rolling up their sleeves and getting involved. It's a lot more on the table now. We're hearing about it a lot more. It's just I'm really craving the jumps. You know, mm-hmm. I want to see jumps. I don't want to see jumps backwards. Mm-hmm. I want to see jumps forward. So, yeah, that's kind of for me looking back at 2019 in terms of the industry. A lot more to be done, really.
Okay. Kate, what about you? What will you remember from 2019 personally and then also from an industry perspective?
Gosh, so personally, I mean, Renee, I'm with you. It's all about the people that you meet and the inspiration and the nuggets and the leadership lessons that you learn along the way. For me personally, my youngest daughter started school, which is quite amazing because I suddenly have a bit more spare time on my hands, although I'm not doing anything particularly creative with it. I'm mainly going for coffee. 2019 was also the year Management Today came back in print, so we were actually set up back in 1966 by Lord Heseltine. So we're one of the country's longest running business titles, but we had a brief 18-month spell out of print. But then our clients, our readers, advertisers were still demanding the print titles. So we were retro and we went back to print and came back as a quarterly. So that's been really exciting to work on. In terms of campaigns and creative, I just think a huge well done to Greggs, actually. I mean, who would have thought they introduced the vegan sausage roll in January. I thought that was a very cool advertising campaign. They kind of mimicked the iPhone ads and they talked about the next generation of sausage roll technology. There was then that Piers Morgan tweet, which they responded to in a very witty way. And it's really helped to turn the business around. They've hit 1 billion in sales last year. And Greggs was also named by Management Today as the most admired company of 2019, which is amazing, given that it's a Newcastle-based company. The CEO, Roger Whiteside, talks about it being a very nice company. You know, they want to make a profit, but they don't go about it in a red-blooded way, which I think is really important. I think language has really come to the fore throughout 2019. So I think with Brexit and politics, we've seen a lot of distrust. We've seen a lot of shocking language being used in Parliament, which has been called out, which I think is a really good thing. I think we see that in business as well. I know John Vincent, the founder of Leon, talks about the way that business is often framed as a war. We talk about smashing targets and annihilating the competition. And I think we need to be a lot more aware about the language that we're using.
I think your point about Greggs is really interesting, because part of the charm, especially from a millennial Gen Z perspective, is the brand is quite, dare I say it, authentic, in that it isn't trying to be something that it isn't. Like, you see, I know Renee hates the word authentic, but I think what you see is so much faff and layers around brands trying to talk to people in a particular way, and there's something so coherent in Greggs' proposition, from its product to how it speaks to customers, that feels very real to it. And hearing what you're saying about the company and its values feels like it lives quite true to that.
It feels like they've really stripped back and they've really embraced the no frills approach. I guess they're the sort of Aldi or Lidl to Waitrose.
You don't see many people offering that product. You know, it's not, you don't see many bakeries anymore. Don't see somewhere where you could just get a sandwich, a coffee and a vegan sausage roll. And actually they do it really, really well.
I mean, there are queues every morning outside Greggs across the country. And what was astonishing to me was to learn that Greggs sells more coffee than Starbucks. Who knew?
Well, Starbucks is more in this coffee.
But you would assume that they had the hold on the market in general. And actually, even if you think about the communication strategy that McDonald's has gone down with its brands of coffee, is like, it's trying to explain to the customer what all these different fancy coffees mean, and that it isn't venti, grande and whatever the other one is, but it's just small, medium and large, and this is what different coffees are made up of. And that simplicity in communication, I think, is powerful, whereby there's been so much like theatre, and I wanted to think of a better word for faff, but faff put around coffee.
Mm-hmm. Do you also think as well, like, outside our London bubble, you know, coffee is expensive, and actually if you can get a coffee, I don't know Greggs, I don't shop at Greggs, I don't know what the coffee is, but I wonder if it's a really reasonable price and it's a decent coffee.
Well, they also do good breakfast deals, so I think, you know, I know we're coming on to New Year's resolutions, let's all make it our New Year's resolution to try out a Greggs vegan sausage roll with a coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
Next panel discussion, we'll review
Fueled
that.
Fueled by Greggs. But it's so interesting, because when I think back to being at school, there was such cachet associated to holding a Starbucks cup in your hand. And now I feel like, in terms of what's cool and what's in the kind of cultural zeitgeist, it represents something that's quite wasteful and unnecessary, versus like the simplicity, and you get what you want at a reasonable price that Greggs and like McDonald's in that example are offering. It's such a revolution from where what I thought was cool 10 years ago to how I would choose to spend my money now.
But I somehow still find it very comforting to carry a latte around with me, and it makes me feel important somehow. But obviously now it's in my eco cup, it's not in a plastic cup.
But I think, going back to your point about Greggs being a really nice place or a nice company to work for or with, you know, Starbucks had its moment, but they were so aggressive. And if I remember, in the UK, they were putting multiple shops on the same street to close everyone else down so that they could have the monopoly. And actually, that's, for me, I feel, has backfired. People started protesting at that. And actually, that's the complete opposite to what Greggs ethos is and their values. So, you know, the rise and fall of the greedy.
What is it about the latte and purchase of it that makes you feel important of interest? Because that resonates with me too. I just wondered if you could.
I don't know if it's just become part of my morning routine. Maybe it's generated from Devil Wears Prada or something, but it's that striding along with a eco mug in one hand and your bag and laptop in the other, feeling
up,
like you're ruling the world. Yeah. And
yeah, I can completely relate to that.
So Crystal, I'm keen to hear about what your reflections are for 2019.
So on a personal note, similar to some of the themes that you've both talked about, but I really feel like 2019 is a year that I'll look back on the year as a kind of massive step change in my life having taken place for lots of reasons, mainly through the people that I've met. My birthday is coming up, and something that I've said to people is that there are so many people who are really important to me in my life who I didn't know at the start of this year. And it's quite rare to have that, especially as you get older. As you say, you kind of have your circle, your tribe, and where time is scarce anyway, it's rare to kind of really go beyond that. But it's been a real shift for me in terms of the people that I've spent my time with and got energy from and felt like I've developed some really deep and amazing friendships with. So that's been amazing. 2019, also the year that I got married, which was amazing. And also just, I think, through a few different influences, like the Marketing Academy, 35 Under 35, like Kate talked about, Future Leaders Award, which is how we met. I feel like all of those things, the accolades in and of themselves are great, but actually, and what I always say to people when they're applying for things is like, think of getting the application in as your success as opposed to getting the award as success. And that's because I think every time you're forced to write about yourself, why do you want this? Who do you want to be? I feel like I'm just getting a better sense of who I am, how I want to show up, and as a result, knowing how I want to spend my time and energy. So I'm still definitely not there yet, but I feel like I'm much further along that journey, and the last year has been a real catalyst in that. And I think a big learning or shift that I've had from 2019 also personally is kind of seeing leadership, but as seeing your work delivered through the hands of other people, as opposed to like having to do all the doing all the time. That's how I remember it from a personal perspective. So from an industry perspective, what characterised the year for me is this transition from inspiration to action. I love the idea that the inspirational keynote is dead, and that actually what people need is really practical, tangible advice rooted in the everyday difficulties that people have to help them achieve what they want to achieve. That is the first thing. And then the second one is really about the power of the individual and taking individual responsibility to make change. I think there are loads of individuals, Greta Thunberg being one of them, where there are people at the fringes who are driving change through taking individual action. Whilst hearing statistics about how behind you are, how the gender pay gap is worsening, can make you feel slightly depressed, I think the individual action that we can all take to drive really big change is really powerful. So they're the two things that kind of have struck me and that I'll remember from 2019.
I really agree with that. I think that we all can do even a small bit to contribute to change.
Totally. And I saw on Instagram after the election quite a few interesting quotes, which was like, there are lots of ways that you as an individual can make change and like create a community or environment that you want to through volunteering, giving to charity. There are lots of other ways than through traditional political channels that you can make change. And I think when you see what individuals can do and the impact they can have, we should all be very empowered by that message.
Woo.
So, yes. So, enough talking about 2019. Let us all look forward to the decade that is upon us, 2020. And let's talk about New Year's resolutions. Kate, what's your view on them?
I enjoy a good resolution. I don't really like it being contained to New Year. And I just think people give it 2 weeks and then they fall by the wayside. For me, I just feel like I'm a permanent work in progress. So I am always making resolutions and trying to stick to them, or, you know, trying to make positive changes. So for me at the moment, it's try and get more sleep, because I just can't find a way to get to bed before midnight. So if anyone has any tips, please let me know. It just feels like by the time, you know, I finished work, we've got the kids to bed, we've had dinner, we've, you know, watched an episode of The Crown, you know, I've read a couple of chapters of a book because I always want to read something to kind of nourish my mind before I go to sleep. It's just so late and I'm sure the lack of sleep is not good for my productivity. Also on my list is to be kinder to my husband. I think he gets...
I'm going to say to be kinder to myself.
No, be kinder to my husband. I think I'm quite kind to myself. I do try and, you know, book in the odd massage or, you know, take time out. You know, I think it's important to invest in yourself, but it is also important to invest in your relationships. And I do feel that James, my husband, gets the worst version of me quite a lot of the time. Sorry, James.
I was just trying to imagine what the worst version of Kate is, because you're so friendly, charming.
I'm a bitch in real life.
And we need to chat to James.
Yeah. Our next panel guest. James Bassett.
Yeah. How about you, Crystal? What are your New Year's resolutions and your opinions of them?
Yeah. So my view on New Year's resolutions is that for them to be successful, you should try doing whatever it is that you want to do at least once before New Year to really make it happen. Because otherwise it can feel so daunting and you really build up into this massive thing. And it makes that first step in January seem like a really big deal. But if you can do it a couple of times in December or in before that start date, I think that breaks the mental block about it a little bit. Also, I think New Year is quite an arbitrary thing, and if you generally want to make any kind of behaviour change, then there needs to be a reason greater than it being the start of a new point in time to do that. And there's a great formula for behaviour change that somebody I used to work with told me, which was behaviour change happens when the pain of not making the change is greater than what you perceive to be the benefits of it. So the thing that I would like to strive for, the goal for me in 2020, is to achieve some level of consistency or routine. I think the flip side of having these crazy, squiggly, hyper, mobile, flexible working lives, which is a joy and a privilege in some ways, is a level of exhaustion and slight lack of control over your routine and time. So I would love to be able to say at the end of 2020, for example, Kate, that I have like a boiled egg and piece of toast and orange juice in the morning for breakfast every day.
It's a good routine.
Sounds like a great routine. The goals that I have are making sure that I take my vitamins in the morning every day, because genuinely some days I don't even go into the kitchen in the morning. Like, there's just no routine to what time I wake up. My alarm is set anywhere between like 4 a.m. and 8 a.m. depending on like if I'm behind on work or if I need to do something or want to go to the gym. And there's just no consistency. And I think that having a slice of the day, whether it's at the beginning of the day or at the end of the day, having a bit of routine would make me feel a bit calmer and more in control.
Just to clarify though, when I talk about having a boiled egg, a piece of toast and orange juice for breakfast, it's not in any way calm or composed or, you know, this beautiful part of the day carved out just for me. Normally there's like cereal being poured over my head and one of the kids has spilt milk all over the floor and I'm going, get your school uniform on, we've got to go, come on, go, go, go. So I don't want to create any false illusions. Yes. Here,
thank you for de-romanticizing that. That is helpful, because you do immediately conjure up these images of, like, you know, like deer floating around you whilst you're having your boiled egg in the morning. But if something for me that would feel brilliant is if I, for example, bought a carton of eggs at the start of the week and like knew how many would be left at the end. It's like, it's clearly like a need to control a small element where it feels like there are so many things that aren't in control. But there's no routine in any part of my life, because things feel so changeable that finding out what those things are for me and sticking to them. So for me, it would be like taking my vitamins in the morning, doing yoga 3 times a week. They are the things that I know that would make me feel in control. So that's what I'm going to be striving for as goals rather than resolutions.
Well, they're anchors, aren't they? They're anchors into kind of routine. So when everything else is kicking off, you know, on a Thursday at 5 o'clock or whatever it is, you're doing yoga. I'm big on routine. Breakfast for me is a must. Without kids, I do have that serene breakfast every morning. Sorry, Kate. But I love breakfast.
I dream of that.
And I do. And no matter what time I'm starting work, I will get up to make sure I have 45 minutes to eat my breakfast and 2 coffees. And before that, I make sure I meditate for at least 20 minutes.
Wow. That is the dream.
But I'm privileged. I don't have children. That wasn't the right thing.
I love that. because for many it is a privilege and we must embrace that. So when you're eating your breakfast mm-hmm. in your 45 mm-hmm. minute time slot, are you reading, are you looking at your phone, or are you just
I'm sitting there
thinking?
Listening to the Today Show on Radio 4, eat my breakfast, have my first coffee, then prep up my second coffee, have my second coffee, and then I'm good to go. Then no matter what the day throws at me, I am absolutely fine.
That sounds great, and you say it's a privilege. I really respect the discipline that goes into that, right? There's to sit and meditate and do all those things in a deliberate way. There's always 1,000 different things that you could be doing at that point, but I really respect that about you and would like to be able to say something that sounds more like your morning in my own flavour at the end of 2020. I think that's
just taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
So important.
Yeah.
Even though you're juggling kids and cereal and milk, you know, you're still taking care of yourself by having that thing that you love.
Mm.
The egg toast, orange juice.
Mm-hmm. And then the banana on the way in. Crucial.
Being nice to James on the way out.
That's going
to
come.
I should have said that in my what I want to be in 2020. I would like to be give more of my best self to Chris and my family. Because, yeah, can definitely give my best self elsewhere and then go home and be a kind of confuddled mess.
But that's the point of home as well. Mm. Don't be too tough on yourself.
So, Renee, over to you.
I love lists. I love focus. I love target. I love resolutions.
Ooh.
But time is a construct. So, you know, beginnings and beginning of the year is slightly laughable in my mind.
Mm.
But, like, I do big New Year's resolutions, but on my birthday. Every year. That's my kind of marker, like looking back to what I've achieved that year and looking forward. But seeing today is the first day of 2020, I do have a few little, maybe they're not so little, but yeah, a few kind of ideas around what I'd like to achieve this year.
Okay, I'm just preparing myself for how unlittle these things are, but please do tell me what your little things are for 2020.
Okay, so for 2020, I have three. And the first one is get greater than 11% magazine out into the world. So I'm aiming to create a quarterly magazine and the first one going out in March at some point. So I've been working really hard in 2019 to start getting that together, getting grants, funding, getting brands involved. So that's super exciting. And I feel that's achievable because I think it's really important with resolutions is just not create something wildly out there. But it's going to be a push to make that happen. The second thing is to push myself completely outside my comfort zone and aim to do 3 public speaking gigs not associated with greater than 11%. As you know, I am not a fan of public speaking. Getting up on stage just still fills me with dread, but I really know that those things need to be overcome. Like, it's really important to me to be able to just move beyond that and not have like a limitation on what's possible. And thirdly, I'm going to invite romance back into my life.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Are we talking online dating or?
I'm not sure yet. I think there will be an element of online. So I've been single for a couple of years now and I've been really focused on my work and my career and my creative kind of output. And I've decided to throw my hat back in the ring.
Mm. They are brilliant resolutions. I love that. And when you think about setting yourself those goals, mm-hmm. do you think about what the measurement of that looks like or what success looks like in it? Because obviously your second one was quite specific to 3 public speaking appearances.
Yeah, I do. I mean, they're all quantifiable. The magazine is going to happen or it won't. Mm. You know, it's going to be a physical project that will become realised.
Mm.
Speaking on stages is an achievable, real thing.
Mm.
I've already got my first one lined up for February, so that's great. Yeah, the inviting romance one's maybe a bit more scary. If at the beginning of 2021, I've got a ring on this finger, it'll be more than just throwing my hat in the ring.
True. There's a great quote by Dan Sullivan, who's the author of The Gain and the Gap, who says, the way to measure your progress is backward against where you started, not against your ideal. So the more that we can think about that in the context of the number of public speaking engagements you did last year or the year before that versus doing a certain number or comparing yourself to somebody else, I think is a really helpful way to think about it, especially when up to 60% of us admit that we'll make a New Year's resolution, but only 8% of us are successful in achieving them. and some interesting facts around New Year's resolutions. Saving money is one of the top five New Year's resolutions and also in the top five most commonly failed. And more than half of people who set New Year's resolutions fail their resolution before January the 31st. There's some interesting research as well around goal setting versus New Year's resolutions, and goals can be more audacious, longer term goals that are about how you want to feel, what you want to achieve, versus focusing on the how, because it's quite easy to be unforgiving to yourself when you set yourself a New Year's resolution of going to the gym 3 times a week, and then the first week that you don't do that, it kind of completely throws you off and you don't adhere to it anymore, versus setting yourself a goal of feeling healthier, whatever that means to you, and then allowing yourself to be a bit kinder and negotiate a little bit around the how you get there might mean that you're more successful in that behaviour change. And there's another interesting definition, I think, between goals and systems. So a goal might be wanting to run the marathon in 2020, and a system might be having a really great diet plan or food regime, and thinking about the system in its entirety and all the things you need to support you in your environment to achieve that goal also means that you put less pressure on the thing in of itself, but more kind of wider scale behaviour change. So I have absolutely loved today's panel. Kate, it has been an absolute delight having you here. I think that you are as much of a master/mistress of the spoken word as the written word, and it's been amazing to have you here. Thank you for all of the brilliant contributions you've made about Greggs. I feel like they need to sponsor your lifestyle going forward.
With a regular vegan sausage roll.
Yeah, you need to go straight to the head of that queue every single time you walk past it, because you're not going to get your Waitrose coffee anymore. And Renee, I love the precision with which you've talked about your resolutions. I love how clear you are on them, and it's actually given me a lot of food for thought about being a bit more specific and measurable with the goals that I set myself. So before we close off our first episode of 2020, what are you most looking forward to in 2020 in one sentence, Renee?
The growth and reach that I feel greater than 11% is going to move into.
Randomly, I learnt to trapeze in 2019. No. I did one lesson, so let's not over-exaggerate. But I found I actually have a hidden talent for it, so I would like to continue that in 2020.
That's amazing.
I honestly just don't think I can follow that. Like, where did that even come from?
2019 was the year of my 40th. Birthday, and many of my friends turned 40 as well, so we just did a lot of fun and unexpected activities, one of which was a trapeze class with a company called Gorilla Circus in Regent's Park, which I would highly recommend. So I would like to do more of that and just continually push myself outside my comfort zone.
I absolutely love that. And I would love some photos.
Didn't you want to do the clown circus?
Yeah, I did, to push myself out of my comfort zone. Yes, we can become the next Cirque du Soleil.
You could be a double act.
Watch this space.
Our Indian moms would be so proud of us.
They'll be in the audience.
Yeah. With their Greg sausage roll.
Crying about all the education that is now being spent as trapeze artists.
We didn't become doctors.
No. The thing that I'm most looking forward to in 2020 is to have some routine in whatever the form that takes for me. So very seemingly boring, but important to me for 2020. So with that, let's go forth, take this year on and create amazing changes in 2020 and in the decade ahead. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Crystal. And thanks, Kate.
Thanks so much and happy new year.
Thank you so much for listening. In this cruel, cruel world that we live in order for us to be successful and get sponsorship, we need you to rate us really highly and say brilliant things so that we can climb those podcast charts. So if you do enjoy this, please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and leave a review, and take your mum's phone and give us a 5-star review on her phone as well, because that will help us, and then we can all take over the world together. Thank you. We'll be right back. last year episode? 2020.
2019.
Oh, shit. 2019. Can I use your thingy? Your pen?
Go on, pen.
That's, oh my that God. Is so. Can you make that into an earring? I feel like that's such earring
quality. The way it wobbles, though, is a little bit weird.
That's part
mesmerizing.
Of the joy of it.
Yeah. But it feels like. I shouldn't be watching, you know? Like,
yeah. Something slightly obscene.
Yeah.
I like the blue feathers as the sea, though. That really makes me happy.
Yeah.